Continental Media 0607. Recorded in early August 2006. I'm Glenn Hauser with this more or less monthly supplement to World of Radio. Continental Media is about media around the American continent, not especially shortwave. It's made possible by Universal Radio for quality amateur and shortwave equipment. Call them toll-free for a catalog, 1-800-431-3939, or visit their website, www.universal-radio.com. They also sponsor the very useful site, dxing.com. We also include some peripheral items, such as this one about Spain, but it is still very much about the American continent, since it concerns the former transmitter site of Radio Liberty. The periodical Radio World carried a special report in its August 2nd online issue titled The Demise of Playa de Pals, Final Chapter by David L. Hollier, who was managing director for Spain of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'll read just a few excerpts and then give you a web link where you can read the whole story. It took only a few seconds and about 32 pounds of dynamite to bring down and destroy 10 megadollars worth of technically sophisticated antennas that had taken years to design and construct. The destruction brings to an end an era that utilized high-power shortwave stations to reach the Soviet Union with news and info and broadcasts in its own languages. The station at Playa de Pals on Spain's Costa Brava, with its specially designed antenna arrays, was one of the most effective shortwave stations to reach the Soviet Union on first hop, and Central Asia on second hop, with a little slewing. It had done this job for the United States government for more than 40 years. A few years ago, the shortwave operation was closed and the land turned back to the Spanish government. One option was destruction of the antenna to clear the land for eventual use as a park, and now that has happened on the afternoon of March 22nd. It was heartbreaking to those of us who had worked at the station and admired the great antennas to watch videos of their ultimate destruction. Yet not everyone was saddened by the event. Some viewers were ecstatic, as evidenced by a cheer that went up as the antennas toppled. Thousands of curiosity seekers and members of the media found advantageous spots to watch. The destruction calls to mind a poem of Walt Whitman. To paraphrase, the towers went down with a great shout upon the hills and left a lonesome place against the sky. There are vague plans to use the 81-acre site as a park with a great beach. Despite lofty sentiments from politicians, many cynical, perhaps realistic Spanish citizens believe this gorgeous chunk of beach land will end up as a site for high-rise condos. Thanks to Mike Barraclough in the UK for sending us that story, and he also made a tiny URL so we can convey the link to you easily, tinyurl.com/n4kzs. And there are a couple of photos of the demolition there. However, other sites are going up. Bert Trutna in Lithuania says a new 800 kilowatt transmitter on 1539 kilohertz is coming in the United Arab Emirates. According to Thomson's Radio News for summer 06, Thomson Broadcast and Multimedia is going to install a third 800 kilowatt transmitter at Dabiya to operate on 1539 with a two-tower directional antenna system. It should be operational by the end of January 07. It's expected that this new transmitter, like the ones on 1170 and 1575, will be leased to the U.S. International Broadcasting Bureau. Here's another overseas link to American Broadcasting. Jose Alba posted on the Condiche list a notice from Radio Nederland's Spanish website saying that RN and National Public Radio have joined to present a new service in Spanish. It will be called Ahora de Radio Nederland y NPR. It will provide to the Spanish-speaking public, more than 45 megapersons in the U.S., a 24/7 service of news, actualities, and in-depth programs produced by Radio Nederland and distributed by NPR to its more than 800 stations in the U.S. However, I suspect it'll have very few listeners, at least at first, because the story goes on to say this new service will be distributed to stations to be used only on secondary audio channels, a new digital radio platform. And the service will also include classical music and jazz. I wonder if it will also include the program I participate in on Radio Nederland, Radio Enlace. No details on that, nor on the date this will actually start. It will be interesting to see how many NPR stations actually start broadcasting the 24/7 Radio Netherlands Spanish service. The August issue of Zounds, the program magazine of KUNM in Albuquerque, includes three long articles about the future of public radio and the funding problems it faces. Excerpts to follow. The Bush administration has proposed a massive cut in federal funding for public broadcasting. While the Senate Appropriations Committee has taken steps to restore funding, the House Appropriations Committee followed the president's lead with a similarly disastrous allocation. If the full House votes for the level of funding reported out of the committee, it could have dire results for stations across the country. The Bush administration's budget proposal for 2007 includes crippling cuts for public broadcasting. The administration proposes to cut $157 megadollars, reducing the federal financial support for public broadcasting by almost 30%. Furthermore, it would mean in the budget zero funds for the following: digital transition, interconnection costs, ready-to-teach program, and public telecommunications facilities program, which means emergency response funds. The current level of public broadcasting funding is the result of a massive public outcry. In 2005, Congress tried to slash $100 megadollars in funding for public broadcasting, but it was reinstated after a backlash by viewers across the country. The funding cuts would be crippling to stations across the country that rely on these funds to keep themselves on the air on a daily basis. Congress must continue to fund public broadcasting at current levels or risk losing one of our most treasured sources of news and entertainment in cities across the U.S. And to refer to a couple of websites for later info, www.moveon.org, www.freepress.net. And if you want to take a more active part, go to this website, www.tellthempublicmatters.org. And let me recommend KUNM Albuquerque is one of the best public radio stations. I listen to it a lot, even though I'm in Oklahoma. They do webcast. And check out their Zounds publication in PDF at their website for lots of more info about the station and program previews, www.kunm.org. Speaking of moveon.org, this was in the online publication Current, which is about public broadcasting. MoveOn.org is soliciting donations for a campaign to beat the NPR PBS 24, the 24 members of Congress up for re-election who voted to cut public broadcasting's federal aid. With your help, together we can retire enough of those representatives to tip the balance on this issue and send a signal that cutting public broadcasting comes with a political price, says the political action team of MoveOn.org. The page I looked at did not name all of them. However, there are six open seats where the anti-NPR incumbent is retiring, two seats where the incumbent skipped this critical vote, and the other 16 include some of the most watched House races, like Representative Charles Taylor, North Carolina, and Jeff Davis, Kentucky, both Republicans. Another item from Current by Jeremy Egner. PBS hopes bleeps and blurred lips keep FCC fines at bay. FCC penalties for broadcasting pixelated images of porn stars and strippers demonstrated that simply turning naughty bits into blurry bits doesn't prevent indecency fines. PBS, uncertain as anyone over the FCC's decrees and still stinging from the recent fine of a public TV station, is taking cover under a new layer of digital obfuscation. Producers who want their work aired in the family-friendly 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. zone now must go beyond audio bleeps to pixelate any on-screen mouths that visibly form curse words. And another story about this by Lisa de Moraes appeared in the Washington Post, July 26th, via Mike Cooper. The FCC's unclear edicts about language on TV have paralyzed documentary filmmakers working for PBS. and its tenfold fine increase could put some PBS stations out of business, the new PBS chief Paula Kerger told TV critics. PBS will file papers in support of KCSM, a small public TV station in Northern California that was hit with a $15 fine for rerunning before 10 p.m. an episode of the Martin Scorsese documentary, The Blues. In the episode, musicians and the relative of a record industry executive used two words that the FCC has deemed unspeakable on the air between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. Sunday mornings at 11 Central Time, KUT in Austin has an hour called The Best of Public Radio. We can't always find out from their website what it'll be about, but on one occasion, July 16th, it was Border Radio, the great big jukebox in the sky. An hour-long music special on the story of Border Radio, lots of good toe-tapping music from hillbilly, western swing, Mexican conjunto, and contemporary rhythm and blues and good old rock and roll. It is a companion piece to another show they've aired in the same slot called Border Blasters and Outlaw Broadcasters, which I've mentioned before. You may still listen to it. Rich Cuff on the SW Programs list says it's among the programs available on the Public Radio Exchange. Now, this is a website. You have to be a member to listen online, but membership is free. It's www.prx.org, and you'll find a great many other public radio programs there, including 200 pieces by Radio Netherlands. Via Media Network, Lou Joseph says, the U.S. audience research company Arbitron has published the 2006 edition of Public Radio Today. It's a free-to-download 45-page report giving a glimpse at the 26 mega people who listen to public radio in the U.S. each week, valuable insights into their education and income profiles, types and amount of public radio programming they're consuming. Fascinating qualitative profiles, too. It's available from this page, www.arbitron.com/study_h/publicrt.asp. I've had a look at it. It's very interesting. On page 16, it surveys the political affiliations of public radio listeners. What do you know? They're not all Democrats. Otherwise obsessed with what public radio listeners may purchase. There's a breakdown by census regions and format combinations, such as news and jazz. One strange thing I noticed, and I wonder if it's because of faulty research methodology, there's a consistent dip shown in listenership in the 45 to 49 age group. In other words, it's higher for those both younger and older. Now to news of some interesting low-power FM stations. The Vail Daily in Colorado, July 28th, had a story, thanks to Ken Kopp for sending it on, that Radio Free Minturn, M-I-N-T-U-R-N, is now on the air. Nearly 8 years ago, the idea was born to create a community radio station in Minturn, Colorado, reflecting the musical and cultural interests of the region. It has come to fruition on June 23rd, as it hit the airwaves at 107.9, a non-commercial, non-profit station entirely run by community volunteers. And they were planning an on-air party at the Saloon, I guess everyone locally knows where that is, on Saturday, August 12th, the official launch celebration. More about it at www.minturnradio.org. And by the way, their call sign is KLNXLP. And in Brattleboro, Vermont, another low-power station is about to come on, at least they hope, WVEW, a story in the Rutland Herald of July 25th. Thanks for this one also to Ken Kopp. Brattleboro's newest community radio station received a local permit allowing installation of an antenna. Organizers of Brattleboro Community Radio hope to begin broadcasting late this summer. In fact, it has until September 2nd to turn the construction permit into a broadcasting license, or else Brattleboro will never have a community radio station again. That, of course, is referring to the celebrated case of Radio Free Brattleboro in lowercase, a 10-watt community station that took on the FCC in a 3-year legal battle. after it got shut down for broadcasting without a license. Although there's no direct connection between the two, we expect that a number of the people involved with RFB are now with WVEW. It's not officially LPFM, but it is a rather low-powered station near Cincinnati. WMKV, I mentioned before, a station dedicated to programming for senior citizens. They suddenly jumbled their program schedule, so my two favorite programs on there are New Times. I had to check the website, so here they are at www.wmkvfm.org. Barbership Harmony Favorites is now UT Wednesdays for about half an hour at 0303 after the news, and also UT Thursdays at 0203. And then World of Theater Pipe Organ has moved to UT Sundays for an hour at 0300. I'm glad of that move because it no longer conflicts with another organ show on WCNY in Syracuse, UT Mondays at midnight. You're listening to Continent of Media 0607. Our address, P.O. Box 1684, Enid, Oklahoma, 73702 USA, or WORADIO at yahoo.com. Glenn Hauser speaking. Well, back to some more FM station news. These from the August issue of FM Media, Bruce Elving. WUFT-FM 89.1 in Gainesville, Florida, has a classical format and got into trouble when a listener complained to the FCC. George P. Reno said the station continued to play music on September 11, 2001, did not break away for news of the tragedies, denying Florida residents of access to necessary info. But the FCC denied his complaint, saying news was available on other outlets and that programming decisions are left to the station. The protest did cause a 3-year delay in the station getting its license renewed and undoubtedly high legal fees. Up in Greenville, South Carolina, WEPR on 90.1 also had problems with a license renewal. Again, delayed 3 years because in October of 03, Joseph Goldsmith filed an informal petition complaining the microwave relay that gets the program from Columbia goes out for extended periods of time, a threat to the upstate audience, which cannot get emergency weather info, such as during hurricanes. But the FCC says rules anticipate there will be times when difficulties beyond the control of the licensee result in discontinuation of service. Another cause celebre was in central Indiana, where someone was trying to force high school FM stations to share time in order to take over the frequencies at least half the time. However, this has not been allowed. The FCC has rejected a petition by RB Schools because it did not negotiate with the existing licensee first. Marty Hensley also applied to force some share time operation. But WNTH 88.1 at New Trier High School in Winnetka has won and will not have to share time. Brock Whaley sends a story from Radio and Records July 19th that the National Association of Broadcasters has asked the FCC to permit AM stations to use FM translators to retransmit AM service as a fill-in service, so long as no portion of the FM signal expands beyond the AM station's daytime contour. They say this would provide consistent service for AM stations. Well, we find this rather remarkable and inconsistent, since the NAB has also been against low-power FM and for IBUC ruining the AM band. Ray T. Mahorney sends a long Los Angeles Times story of July 19th. Classical station owner sticks to playing solo. Saul Levine could sell K Mozart Radio for $100 million or more, but he's not about to. In 1958, atop Mount Wilson, Saul Levine built a radio station almost with his own hands. He used a rented tractor to clear scrub brush from a patch of land, so remote that the Forest Service leased it to him for $350 a year. With the help of a carpenter, he built a shack to house his broadcast equipment, mostly secondhand, and a bare-bones studio, the antenna atop a flagpole. It went on the air in February 1959. Today, that classical music station, known as KMZT, 105.1 is worth at least $100 million and perhaps more. But only if Levine would give it up, and he's not about to. He's 80 years old and still comes into the office, a modern three-story building every day, housing his other station, KKGO AM 1260, which plays pop standards. He oversees every aspect of the station operations, including advertising sales and on-air personalities. In an industry that has gone corporate, Levine is one of the last of a breed, the independent radio station owner. Others, especially in classical music, which has a limited aging audience, long ago accepted offers from industry giants that snapped up FM stations in lucrative markets. Levine refuses to bow to economic pressures that have shut down commercial classical music operations to the point that there are only about a dozen left nationwide, fewer than half of what were there 20 years ago. Levine says, whenever I get an offer, I call my wife, and she tells me to tell them to go away. She doesn't want me hanging around the house, and I would go nuts. Furthermore, he does not want his children, both of whom are involved in the operation of the company, Mount Wilson Broadcasting, Inc., to sell when he is gone and live off the proceeds. He says, you are supposed to work. I would not want them to sit around on an island in the Mediterranean. FM Media has some more items about AM stations, which have been under private ownership for many years. WPAQ 740 in Mount Airy, North Carolina, founded by Ralph Epperson in 1948. He recently died at 85. He'd worked at the station until 2 weeks before his death. It's now being run by his son, according to Radio Journal Online. The station's nearly 60 years is considered a record, especially since it's been a one-owner station run from the same studios with local music and news. Another contender for longevity with one owner and from the same studios is WCAP 980 in Lowell, Massachusetts, which came on in 1951. One of three brothers who put it on, Maurice Cohen, not only survives but runs the daily operation. And in Nashville, Tennessee, WNAY 1360 may be the station run the longest time by a single owner, Van Irwin, who started the station in December 1949, still works there. Big news in early August was that from September 1st, Air America switches its New York flagship from WLIB 1190 to WWRL 1600. Yes, the WLIB deal expires on August 31st, so their progressive talk lineup moves to WWRL as part of a new strategic alliance. That's from an Air America press release via Inside Radio via Ken Kopp. Several DX listeners were quick to point out that being at the top of the dial, WWRL will not have as great a coverage area as WLIB in the middle of the dial. Rene Tetro, chief engineer of Salem in Philadelphia, explains this disparity. All things being equal, a 250-watt non-directional signal at 570 is about equivalent to a 5,000-watt signal on 1600. The higher the AM frequency, the less the ground wave coverage for the same amount of power. There have been lots of theories put forth, but the most logical is this. As frequency increases, wavelengths get shorter. A wavelength at 570 would be about 1,642 feet, while at 1,600 a wavelength is about 585 feet. If a station on 570 and one on 1600 both transmit at the same power, 250 watts, the signal will only carry so many wavelengths before it weakens and becomes unmistakable. Once it's a wavelength at 570 is about three times as long as one at 1600, the same amount of power should give you triple the coverage, assuming both stations are using the same electrical height towers, say a quarter wavelength, have similar ground systems, and operate over similar areas of ground conductivity. I'm sure there are many more examples like the following, but here's one. Great minds think alike. Both ABC and CBS started a story about prescription mistakes within half a minute of each other, July 20th, during their evening newscasts, joined by NBC a minute later. By the way, have you noticed that ABC rejiggering its newscast with Charles Gibson has dropped the word tonight from its title. Now it's just ABC World News. They must have been listening to me, since I've pointed out before that it airs far before any signs of nighttime, especially in the summer, such as 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. But On the other networks, it's still NBC Nightly News and the CBS Evening News. Here's an interesting item from Brazil in Célio Romay's Panorama column of July 23rd, which I'll try to translate on the fly. The official daily of the Union has published a story that gives people who have special needs access to all the content of Brazilian radio programming. They will have at their disposal resources such as dubbing, audio description, hidden captions, and a window with a Brazilian sign language interpreter. Businesses will have 11 years, however, to adopt this, but between now and 2 years from now, at least 1 hour of programming must be accessible. More from the website www.rets.org.br. Steve Hawkins wrote this to the International Radio Club of America. A couple of months ago, I noticed a new kind of interference. It was always there, even in the daytime. I shut off power to my house, and it was still there. So I figured for a while it must be one of the neighbors. No, it was the propane-powered mosquito trap that my wife bought so that she could work in the garden and not be constantly attacked by squadrons of huge mutant mosquitoes. I woke up at about 3 a.m. and while in the kitchen attempting to get a cup of life-saving balm, he says his back had a pinched nerve, I noticed a faint blinking light on my lawn. Thinking that perhaps a UFO had landed in my yard, I went outside with my cell phone, prepared to call Coast to Coast AM. I could see that the light was coming from her mosquito trap. As I got closer, I could hear a fan running. Since I put it together for her, I knew that it had no source of power other than the propane. It turns out that they are using the propane burner to generate CO2 to attract mosquitoes, and to somehow generate electricity to cause two lights to blink, and to run a fan that sucks the careless mosquito that ventures too close into the trap. But it also generates an odd, almost whine on all frequencies below 10 megahertz. Perhaps above also, but those antennas are further away, so I had not noticed it there. So do beware of propane-powered mosquito traps. Hope you've enjoyed these stories. That concludes Continent of Media 0607. Glenn Hauser here. The program also known later as World of Radio Extra 71.